Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a new affiliate to welcome, KYRS 88.1 and 92.3 FM in Medical Lake, Spokane, Washington. I'm looking forward to helping your nonprofits. Welcome, KYRS. Thank you so much for being with Nonprofit Radio and being our newest affiliate, KYRS. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with angioimmunoblastic lymphadenopathy if you gave me the bad news that you missed today's show. Linkage, ability, and interest. Introducing the LAI principle for rating potential donors. Maria Semple walks us through it. She's our prospect research contributor and the prospect finder. And crowdfunding legal tips. Gene Takagi is our legal contributor and principal of NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group. He raises your consciousness about legal issues around the popular crowdfunding sites, and he walks us through those. On Tony's Take Two, Nonprofit Radio on the Road and Third Sector. We're sponsored by Opportunity Collaboration, the working meeting on poverty alleviation that will ruin you for every other conference. I'm very glad that Maria Semple's back with me. She's the prospect finder, a trainer and speaker on prospect research. Her website is theprospectfinder.com, and her book is Panning for Gold. Find your best donor prospects now, exclamation mark. She's our doyen of dirt cheap and free ideas. You can follow her on Twitter at Maria Semple. Welcome back, Maria.
Hey there, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing terrifically well. How are you today?
I'm just fine. A little bit of allergies going on, but other than
I'm sorry.
You know, I think everybody's suffering, though, right?
Well, I suppose. I see. You have a lot of allergens in New Jersey?
You know, this year seems to be particularly bad. I have not been bad in past years, but I don't know what's going on this year. I guess it must have all exploded at once.
Okay. I'm allergic to some people in New Jersey, mostly mostly my
family.
That's right. No, not you. Mostly my family. No. All right. My mom and dad don't listen, so they wouldn't know that I just said that. They're big fans of the show, but they don't listen. This LAI, linkage, ability, and interest. We're using this for tracking and rating our potential donors. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I thought it would be an interesting topic today. I was recently asked to speak about this on another person's webinar, and I was thinking that it was something you and I had not covered in the past, and it's certainly something that is free and dirt cheap, right, because it's being done by staff, board, volunteers, and, you know, can really involve a lot of different people in this process. And it's probably, you know, a pretty important part of the overall fundraising process when you think about it, because, you know, we only have so many hours in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year. So we really need to be able to focus on where to allocate our time and our resources, right? So human resources, funding, et cetera. So, you know, what we're trying to really get down to is answering that most basic question in fundraising is really how to qualify people, right?
Okay.
So,
yes.
Hopefully, you know, at the end of the next few minutes together, we'll come up with a process for your listeners that people can start to implement.
Okay. All right. So, let's take our first part, linkage. What do they mean by linkage? Linkage to what?
Right. So linkage to the organization. So how is this person linked to your organization? Who is that that individual that might stand between you and that prospect? So, you know, it could be that you have a board member who has access to this individual. Maybe it's a staff member or some other volunteer with the organization. So they're really kind of like, in LinkedIn terminology, they're really just 2 degrees separated from you. And in some cases, somebody might be more than 2 degrees separated. And then that's going to really kind of affect how well linked they are to your organization already and how much they already know about you, right?
All right. I have to quibble with you about something now. LinkedIn did not create that 2 degrees of separation.
No, correct.
That comes from Kevin Bacon.
That's right.
I don't want the social networks taking over our storied traditions. That is a Kevin Bacon, story, whatever you want to call it. That is not attributed to LinkedIn.com. All right.
But of course, LinkedIn can help you in this process when you're trying to determine linkage, right? So if you're just trying to figure out, you have a known individual, maybe they've come to a gala or something, and you're trying to figure out, well, who can really help us, cultivate and potentially solicit this individual?
Right.
We want to engage them a little further in our cause. And so, certainly, LinkedIn is one of the tools that you might be able to use. I think, why not use that technology that's there to help determine how many degrees they're separated from you?
Oh, I'm not objecting to using LinkedIn.
In terms of linkage and proximity to the organization, so geography, I think, in my opinion, could potentially play an opportunity here into linkage. So if you're really a small nonprofit, and you serve a very small geographic area, is this prospect living in that geographic area, or do they live somewhere else in your state, but maybe they have an interest in funding your type of cause? So, I do think that geography can play a role in this as well.
Okay. Also, the giving history, right?
Yes.
In terms of their closeness to the organization. Another way of measuring that is how often and at what level have they been giving, and how regularly.
Absolutely. And, we've all heard of these stories in the press, right, of people who pass away, they leave a lot of money to an organization, they were only donors at, say, very modest levels, but they were consistent, right? So they were consistent, long-time donors. And, I'm preaching to the choir with talking to you about this, Tony, but, certainly past giving history is, even if the gift amounts have not been very high, I really do think you have to take into account that longevity of how long they've been with you.
Yes, and that's particularly true looking for potential donors in planned giving. But yeah, that committed person who's been giving, and, maybe you've heard me, you probably have, because we've done seminars together, say that, even if it's $10 a year or $10 a couple times a year, but they've been doing it for a long, long time, like 8 out of the past 10 years or 12 or 15 out of the past 20 years. I mean, that's a lot. That's a really committed person, even at low levels. So you want to consider them as potential, maybe not for what you might consider a major gift, but certainly for potential volunteering, planned gifts, or maybe moving them up the giving in the giving ladder. That consistency is really important, irrespective of the size of the gift. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Maria. So, you knew I would agree with you, right? You were on safe ground. You knew.
Well, right. Yeah, of course.
Plus, I feel bad. I feel bad about my rant about the Kevin Bacon phenomenon. So I didn't want. But you know me well enough that you know it's no harm done, no harm intended, no harm intended. Maybe harm done, but I didn't intend any. But I don't think so. What's ability all about after linkage?
So the A for ability. So really, it's really the ability rating is based on their ability of what they can give and not what we think they will give.
Yeah, okay.
And so that could be two completely different numbers, right? You might be talking to your board members and your board will say, and this could go in either direction, right? So the conversation might be something like, we really think that this person, the board, think this person is certainly capable of contributing to our annual campaign or our capital campaign at a level of, $5,000. And, maybe your research reveals that this person, has never given anywhere near that amount. Maybe all of the donations you've ever been able to find of what they give to other organizations in your community are maybe $200 and below. So certainly, you know, you want it to rate it in the, you know, appropriately in terms of their rating for their ability. But it could also be in the other direction. So the conversation could be, gee, we think this person's capable of donating $5,000, and your research reveals that, in fact, they're, you know, they've made in the past, in the recent past, a $25,000 commitment to another organization. So knowing that, you're potentially leaving money on the table by not asking for a higher amount.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Let's go out for our break a little early, and if there's more to say about ability, of course we will, and then we'll cover interest, and then we got to put this all together. What the heck do we do with all this info that we've got? Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MartinetiNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Those small and mid-sized shops, that's who we're always about. I got live listener love. Cartersville, Georgia. Marquette, Michigan. San Francisco, California. Duncanville, Texas. Cool. And Carmel, Indiana. Special belated birthday wishes out to Carmel, Indiana. Live listener love to each of you. There's others out there. Don't fret if you're still listening. There's others out there. More live listener love coming. And of course, we got our podcast pleasantries for everybody listening some other time on some other device unknown to maybe many of us, but pleasantries to the 10,000 podcast listeners. And we got more love coming out, so don't worry about that, affiliate affections. All right, Maria, anything more that we want to say about ability, the person's ability to make a gift, how much we think they're capable of giving?
Now, I think we'll say a little bit more about it in the next few minutes after we cover interest, because I want to go over some general levels of ability. So we'll get into that when we get into the rating.
Okay. It'll be a little mysterious on me. Okay. That's mm-hmm. fine. All right. Okay, then let's go to our interest. What is this about?
So really, you know, here we're trying to understand, you know, if they could really be engaged in the organization. How interested are they? Do they have a specific area of interest? You know, are they connected to you because of a particular passion that they have? Or maybe there's something that actually connects them to your program. You know, maybe you serve people with disabilities and they have a family member, a close family member who is, you know, has disabilities and may or may not be using your services currently. You know, so what happens here is that, you know, we understand their interests so that we can fulfill a need that they have to make the world a better place. And then, you know, they're really going to be only too happy to invest in your mission or your services or your building campaign or, you know, whatever other major campaign you're doing, perhaps an endowment campaign or a legacy plan gift campaign. So, you know, you're really looking to fulfill a need that they have. Understand what they're interested in and helping them fulfill their mission. So, you know, having a general idea of what they're interested in is certainly going to come into play in your overall research.
All right. Now, someone could be, you know, very closely connected under linkage and have very high ability, but maybe they're not connected. If they're connected, they wouldn't be uninterested. Let's see. I guess my point is someone could be very high in one or two of these, but quite low in another one.
That's right.
Like maybe right. interest, and maybe interest is very high, ability is very high, but linkage, nobody knows them. They're not connected to us at all.
Exactly. And then what do we do there?
Yeah.
You know, we've really got to find a path to that individual because, you know, if they have a high ability, then it's pretty darn likely that you're not the only person knocking on their door
right.
trying to get a gift.
Right.
And
now this,
you know,
can also apply for foundations and corporations too, right? This is not just individual ratings or what?
You know, I like to apply this more for individual ratings, but, you know, I suppose it could certainly apply for foundations and corporations as well. So much of what I focus on is individuals, but I think you could probably apply this very same formula to your foundation and corporations as
yeah.
well.
And corporations, yeah. I'm thinking, especially local businesses, local corporations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it could apply for bigger ones too, but you know, if your campaign is around cultivating local business people, and then I think these things would apply equally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've got our LAI laid out now. What the heck are we going to do with this?
Okay. So let's talk about a typical rating system and how you would potentially tally up some points, because what we're trying to do here ultimately is try and figure out who are our best prospects, where should we be focusing our time. So this is a very general number that you might come up with in this rating process.
Is this going to involve mathematics?
Yes, but very simple math, because look, I'm not a math person either.
All right,
you're probably more of a math person than me, being in planned giving.
Do I have to do division?
No, I really think it's just straight up addition.
All right, addition is okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. As long as there's no logarithmic found formulas or
nothing like that.
okay.
Okay.
Regression.
So the total number of points that you can get is 15.
Okay.
So your absolute best prospect is going to be rated a 15, and this is how it breaks out. By the way, I got this off of a document that I found on AFP's website. So if you just Google LAI principle, it's probably one of the first three hits that you'll get on Google.
LAI principle. Okay. But could we also get you to post it as a comment on the on the Facebook page takeaways that'll be up by 3:30 or 4, no, around 4 o'clock Eastern today? Could you do that?
Sure, I'll get that
comment
out there for you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so go ahead. So 15.
So linkage. So you're going to go from a score of 0 through 4. So 0 would be if there's absolutely no record of giving and no contact with that donor. They're rated a 0 for linkage.
Okay. All right, so there's what I was talking about before. Somebody could be very low in something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay,
it could be a 0.
Now, you said 0 to 4. Can you do 1 to 5?
Right.
Or that's not,
well, for purposes of the download that I got from AFP, it went from 0 to 4.
Okay.
So would be if they made a pledge but no gift, or maybe a one-time or a memorial gift to your organization.
All right, I'm just making trouble. All right, we'll stick with 0 to 4. I prefer 1 to 5, but we'll go with yours. Okay, go ahead.
A 2 would be if they're a lapsed or just an occasional donor your organization.
Yeah.
A 3 would be if they're a frequent donor, let's say annually. But number 4 would be if they're a frequent or current major gift donor. So best that you can get is 4, or in your case, if you prefer to do 1 through 5, best would be 5.
Okay.
But since I said at the outset we'd have a maximum of 15 points, we'd have to kind of stick with the 0 through 4 rating system for the purposes of this discussion anyway.
So they're not all going to be 0 to 4 then? Okay. Because
correct.
Because that would only be 12.
So,
see, I actually multiplied. I actually just multiplied 3 times 4. So, you know, so give me a break. All right. All right. So go ahead. Now, ability, we have a different. Now, how many do they break out to ability? 0 to what?
7.
Okay,
from
let's
0
just
through 7.
Okay. Let's just sample them a little bit. Let's not read all 7 categories.
Okay, so 0
levels.
Would be if they've given you from $1 to $2,400. A 4 would be somewhere between $50,000 and $99,000. And a 7 would be 500,000 and above.
All right, so but of course you would scale that to your organization. If you're
right,
if,
you
if
could
the largest
scale it, yes.
Right, if the largest gift you've ever gotten is $150,000, no point in having $500,000 on your scale.
Right.
So you scale right. so you'd scale your scale appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Scale the scale. All right. I hope you're having fun with this because I am. I don't know if I can't tell if you are, but maybe it's pretty new to me, so I'm enjoying it. Okay. What do we do? So that's 0 to 7 for ability you're recommending.
Right.
So we got 4 and 7, 11. So the next one must only go 0 to 4.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
0 to 4
I did
again.
Subtraction. At that time, I did subtraction. All right, go ahead. Interest.
So 0, no interest, no knowledge, or very minimal knowledge, okay, in your organization. And at the other end of the scale, a 4 would mean that they're actively involved in your organization, they volunteer, or perhaps they're a board or even a past board member, right?
Yes.
Or maybe think about even a past honoree. So for many organizations where an annual gala with an honoree is somebody, if you have an honoree like that, certainly they would have had some more in-depth connection to your organization, hopefully.
Yes. Okay, those are good ones. Yeah, especially honoree. That's one people might not have thought of, but all right, that's cool. All right, so we have totals in each of our three categories. I'm guessing we're going to add these up.
Right, so then you would add them up, and as I said, you'd have a maximum of 15. So now you have some decisions to make, right? Like, what is that minimum score that your organization is going to need to have in place before you put that person into a pipeline for one-on-one cultivation and solicitation, right? Because you're only going to have so much staff and or so many board members committed to helping you reach out to do some of these major gift solicitation efforts. So now you have to figure out how many prospects can we end up with that's going to be manageable. Because if you give somebody an unmanageable number, then people get overwhelmed. And what's going to happen? They're probably not going to do an awful lot.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know what you know what I love about this is this for small and mid-sized shops, this replaces what can be a very expensive wealth screening process. You can pay companies to do that for you, and then they'll stratify your prospects, and then you'll proceed from there. But this is for smaller shops. There's time involved in doing the research here, but if you can do that, it's a way of stratifying your prospects, and then you got your what was the top score again? 15. You got your 15 to, maybe your 15 to 13 is your top prospects. And then 12 to 10, obviously second tier, but you stratify and then you apply resources appropriately. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you mentioned wealth screening, and even if you've had or are planning to have a wealth screening done, that's really going to help answer the ability part,
right.
And help you stratify where they could potentially be giving to you. So, maybe you know about linkage to your organization, maybe you know about interest, and maybe a wealth screening is what's going to help you really flesh out what their ability is without, doing major in-depth research like I would normally do. I mean, if you've got access to a wealth screening product, definitely see what the screening rating is going to be, even on that through that product that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So you were saying that I guess there's a threshold of maybe below which you would not apply resources. Maybe it's I think it would depend organization by organization, but like maybe it's 5 or 7 or something below a score.
That was my gut reaction too, Tony, was maybe a 5 or a 7 for a small organization you really have very limited manpower, both on staff and volunteer side. You don't want to discount anybody.
Well, you have to.
Again,
you have to apply resources smartly. I mean,
exactly.
Every potential donor can't be pursued. But you know what else this does? It helps you see where you might have weaknesses with a prospect who would otherwise be strong. So in our example, you know, if ability and interest are high, but linkage is low, and that puts the person below whatever your cutoff is. Let's say it's 7. There, I did division again. I was taking half the score. I'm on my mathematics game. if they're 7 or below, but that's because their linkage is really low, but ability and interest are doing well, then, you know, maybe now you've identified somebody who you want to try to get close to the organization, and maybe that doesn't take so much to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could be just, you know, a matter of sitting around and having a very concentrated development committee meeting where you're able to then try and figure out, okay, look, these are our prospects that rated pretty highly for ability and interest. If we could only determine what the linkage piece is,
yeah.
You know, so in that would be a really good exercise to engage your board members in the fundraising process.
Yeah, cool.
Because it's still part of the process, right? It's just that they're maybe not involved in the direct ask, because sure, there are certainly a lot of board members who say, I'll do anything for you in the development process, just don't make me do the ask.
Yeah.
So this is a terrific way to engage them in the fundraising process.
Yeah.
And maybe even they would get excited about, you know, getting out and doing some of those asks.
Also, interest. I mean, ability, we got to face it, ability is not much the organization can do around ability. But
no.
Interest, like if linkage is high and ability is high, but the person just hasn't shown a lot of interest. Maybe they're not interested. So that, you know, you have to consider that possibility. They just may not be interested. But if you're not convinced that that's the case, you know, maybe there's some program or something that you can use as a connection and use your linkage, the relationship, to try to get that person more interested in your work because they rated low in that part.
Right. That would be a great use of a cultivation event,
yeah.
For example.
So I'm seeing this.
That pool of people.
I'm seeing this as a way not to just stratify people, but also identify where weaknesses are with potential donors and where you might apply some resources to get them rated higher in your LAI system.
Absolutely.
All right. We got another minute or so. Is that right, Sam? Just another minute or so. Maria, you want to leave us with something around LAI?
Well, you know, good research is really what enables matching the prospects with giving opportunities, right? Again, as I said, so you're fulfilling a need that they have to make the world a better place. So I think if you just sort of keep that at the forefront of everything that you're doing using this LAI principle, and always making sure that everything that you're doing in terms of your communications, any engagement that you have with people, make it as donor-centric as possible. It's not about you, the organization, okay? Ultimately, yes, it is. But when you're talking with people, it's trying to find that point of engagement that's really going to get them excited and motivated and really want them to make an investment in your cause.
Maria Semple, theprospectfinder.com, and at Maria Semple. Thank you very much, Maria Semple.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure to have you. Thank you. Hope she didn't mind that I had some fun with LAI. I don't think so. You don't take that stuff personal. Tony's Take Two and crowdfunding legal tips coming up. First, opportunity collaboration. It's a week-long unconference in Ixtapa, Mexico in October around poverty alleviation. It's structured, but it's unstructured. It's structured with lots of unstructured time. So you can make connections and get to know the people who can help you with your work. There's over 300 people there. You meet over meals, a drink. You meet in the ocean. I had meetings with two women who became guests of the show. And we met in the ocean. It was Nina Chanpreet Kaur and Lena Srivastava. They were on after I met them in the ocean. Well, we met on land, but then we planned our meeting for in the ocean. No PowerPoints, no keynotes. Every session is in a circle. It's very collaborative. And I think you're getting a sense of how it's not like other conferences. Much better. I loved it last year, and I'm going again this year in October. OpportunityCollaboration.net. Nonprofit Radio is going west. I'm headed to Phoenix. Actually, I leave tomorrow. Phoenix, LA, San Francisco, and then Portland. If you're in any of those areas or between LA and San Francisco, because I'll be driving, then let's try to meet up. My itinerary and video are at tonymartinetti.com. Third Sector Today, that's a site run by Amy DeVita. She has lots of contributors, including Maria Semple. Oh, I was going to ask Maria Semple about that. I want to see if she's defecting to Third Sector Today. I doubt it. But she was on, she was a contributor to Third Sector Today. They have tips, strategies, good ideas for nonprofits. They are at thirdsectortoday.com, and they are at Third Sector Today on Twitter. But the third is the number three. Of course, that's the Arabic number three, not the Roman numeral three. Don't do IIIRD. Do at Arabic number three, RD, Sector Today on Twitter. Use the Arabic number. That's Tony's Take Two for Friday, 22nd of May, 21st show of this year. And now I'm very glad that Gene Takagi is with me. He's the managing editor of NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco. He edits the popular nonprofit lawblog.com. And on GTAC, on Twitter, he is GTAC, which is much easier than Third Sector because there's no Arabic numbers to explain whether you use the Arabic or the Roman. At GTAC, welcome back.
Hi, Tony. Great to be back.
Oh, thank you. And I'm looking forward to seeing you on my West Coast trip in 10 days or so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to sit down. That'll be a pleasure. You're concerned about our brand and our name, and there's some legal issues you want people to be aware of around the very popular crowdfunding sites.
Right, and I'm actually picking up off your conversation with Amy Semple Ward of N10 last week.
Last week, yes, you are.
And, you know, Amy, and you discuss sort of the differences between an individual raising funds for a charitable purpose, like for the victims of the earthquakes in Nepal, and a charity actually raising funds. And Amy was pointing out how individuals through GoFundMe had actually raised almost double what a big charity had for that. And so I just wanted to work off that a little bit about saying, well, when people give a contribution to an individual, even if it's for charitable purposes, there is no charitable deduction for that gift. Whereas if they make the donation to a charity that's using a crowdfunding site, and if this is done properly, they can get a deduction for the gift. There's still a few more little intricacies involved, but that's a huge difference.
Okay, wait. Now, if we give to an individual's crowdfunding campaign, but as Amy and I were talking about, there's pretty simple ways of getting the money directly to the charity so that the individual doesn't have to pass it on. And then if the person has that set up and then we get an acknowledgement from the charity, can't we get a charitable income tax deduction that way?
Yeah, that would be where an individual is authorized by the charity to represent the charity and set up the crowdfunding site. But much of crowdfunding is done by individuals who are just doing it for charitable purposes. And Amy mentioned the example of somebody saying, well, you know, I have friends who are on the site in Nepal, and if we get them the money, they can help victims immediately, directly themselves, and it doesn't have to go through any bureaucracy.
Right, right. Okay.
That's not using a charity, and they're not going to get a receipt from a charity for that type of donation. There was a fire in San Francisco, I believe it was last month, and an individual wanted to raise funds, really charitably inclined, well-intended, and what he did was he raised $150,000, which he had no idea he was going to raise that much. I think he was planning to raise a few thousand to help some of the victims of that fire. He raised $150,000, and of course, if you give it to an individual, the individual has no power to say that you gave it to a 501c3 organization, and therefore you get no deduction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see the distinction. Yes. All right. We also need to be aware of who is raising money under our name.
Yeah, absolutely. So if charities are involved and an individual says to you, well, I'd like to raise money for your project and I want to use a crowdfunding site, again, we've got that problem about, well, whether the charity is actually the named recipient on the crowdfunding site. for the donations or where the individual is. And the individual's own account is collecting the money, and then the individual then transfers that money to the charity. Again, you have the problem of the donor getting no receipt from the charity because the donation, the check wasn't actually to the charity, it was to the crowdfunding site sort of processor that's going to the individual and not to the charity at all. Unless that's set up separately so that, that the charity is the recipient and the individual is basically just the agent, whether an employee or a volunteer that set it up for the charity, the donor has got to really beware of that. And of course, donors have to beware if they ever give to individuals because maybe it doesn't go to the victims of the earthquake in Nepal or the victims of the fire in San Francisco. Maybe it just goes into somebody's pocket and you don't necessarily know how because that may never get reported.
That's true. And on the charity side, seems like it would be worth investigating to see whether your name is being used by people that you haven't authorized.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can we do that?
That's a great point. I think the easiest way to do it is just to Google the charity's name once a while, and you might even Google it with the term crowdfunding. Just to check to see if anybody has started a crowdfunding campaign with the name of your charity, you're actually not seeing any of those funds.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they have checks go out to the acronym of your charity, it's very easy to set up a for-profit business with the same acronym and have all the funds go into that account. So fraud is a possibility when you're giving to crowdfunding sites. So you want to, as a donor, again, you want to be really careful about making sure that any donation that you make through a crowdfunding site is actually going to the charity.
I never thought of that. Setting up a... I'm not a savvy thinker like these criminals are and fraudsters. I never thought of incorporating a business that has the same initials as a charity, as a big-time charity, and then collecting checks.
It's actually a good tip for internal controls of the own organization because any volunteer or employee that handles checks could also do the same thing with acronyms. So
yes.
Be very careful about that in your internal controls.
You mentioned doing searches, but even a savvier way is, and I think every organization should do this, is have alerts set for your name, whether it's Google Alerts. Now, some time ago, Maria and I talked about how Google Alerts were not very sophisticated, and we weren't even sure they were still supported. But there are other alert companies that are free. They'll give you a free, like mention.net is one that I use for my name and also for the hashtag nonprofit radio, and they'll give you a couple for free. Then after that, you have to pay. But I think it's very smart. And then I have other alerts for my company and the show name and everything. I think it's very smart to have alerts set for your organization name, so that you find out when it pops up real time or near real time in blogs or on sites or wherever.
I think that's fantastic advice, Tony.
In the press,
I agree, absolutely.
Somebody might write about you in the press. Yeah, so all right. But from a risk management perspective too. All right, Gene. Cool.
Beyond even the deductibility, the donation issue, if somebody's using your name out there and harming it in any way, the loss of the value of your brand and the trust of the community can be far more important than any loss of deduction by a donor.
Yes, for sure. We've talked about that, reputation. What if we're thinking about, as an organization, engaging on a crowdfunding site? We're thinking about having a campaign. Maybe it's around an event, maybe it's around a program or a building, whatever it is. What tips do you have for going about this?
Great question. And there are so many crowdfunding sites out there. There are a few that people are well aware of, or many people are well aware of, like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, GoFundMe, or just a few of those. But there are literally thousands of crowdfunding sites out there now, and you want to make sure that you're connected, if you do connect with a crowdfunding site, that you're connected with a very good one, with a very strong reputation, with a clear understanding of what the terms are of the agreement and what type of fees they may be collecting. They also may be regulated if they're providing fundraising solicitation services
Oh, geez, so we're getting into you're getting into a whole morass now with the charity solicitation registration morass.
Yeah, which you're an expert at.
Yeah,
Tony.
I know
and
a little.
So if,
I know a little.
You know,
about
if they're soliciting for you, if they're controlling or receiving any money on behalf of your charity, and not just through a payment processor like PayPal, but they're actually controlling it in one of their accounts, or even if they're advising you as to what to put in the content of your fundraising solicitations, then they may be regulated as a commercial or professional fundraiser or as fundraising counsel. Basically, anybody that's soliciting or providing advice to the charity on solicitations, and that's a regulated area that they're going to have to think about registering, not only in the state in which they might be located, but in any state in which they're engaging in solicitations with crowdfunding. That could be all states, so that's something to be very careful about.
Now that let's be careful. Now that would be a burden if they were considered, and of course the laws vary state by state. This is why it's such a huge morass. I was going to use an expletive, but we're on too many terrestrial affiliates. I can't do that. But it's a morass. Okay, so because of this, the different state laws. But if a crowdfunding site operator was considered a commercial, a fundraising counsel or a professional solicitor, then you're saying that site would have to register, right?
Yeah, that site would have to register, and the charity actually has some responsibility as well to make sure that they're not engaging in a contract with a commercial fundraiser, professional fundraiser, fundraising solicitor, fundraising counsel that is not registered.
Right. Well, then there's the organization has the obligation in a lot of states to disclose those relationships.
And so, also to disclose the start of any solicitation campaign using one of those individuals or companies.
Right. Right, whether it's crowdfunding or not, but let's try to stick with crowdfunding. All right, I don't want to lose anybody here. Okay, for that morass, I think that's as deep as we can go. But you have let's give you a shout out. You have an article on this, not that we're wrapping up or anything, but on this solicitation and solicitation registration issue, and on the issue that the crowdfunding site operators could be considered fundraising counsel, et cetera, right? You have some blog posts on that, right, at nonprofitlawblog.com?
Yeah, definitely. If you just do a search on the blog site on crowdfunding, you'll see a number of articles,
okay,
and some of them discuss that issue.
Okay, excellent, right. But we just have a minute and a half, by the way, before our break. Let's look at some other tips. I mean, if you're going out to a crowdfunding, you're evaluating crowdfunding sites, what other things should you be looking about?
Well, I think you want to look at how the system works. So some crowdfunding sites are actually set up as donor-advised funds, and that's where they're charities themselves. And if they are a charity themselves, what they're going to do is they're going to take the donation, which is going to be made in their name, and they're going to take the advice of the donor to re-grant it to your charity. But they actually don't have the legal obligation to re-grant it to your charity. In that case, the only time when that's really at risk is if your charity happens to be in trouble, basically, with the IRS and its 501c3 status is in dispute, or the Attorney General is saying you're doing something unlawful, then the crowdfunding site that's a donor advised fund may decide that it's not going to re-grant it to your charity and still re-grant it to another organization with the same charitable purpose. So that's one thing to think about, is what type of entity, whether it's a charitable entity or for-profit entity, your crowdfunding site is.
All right, we got to go out for our break. We got some more tips that Gene will share, and got to do some more live listener love. So stay with us.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag NonprofitRadio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's @TonyMartinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like nonprofit radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
I'm Peter Shankman, author of Zombie Loyalists, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Time to send affiliate affections to all our affiliates around the country, especially shout out for KYRS, but all the affiliates love the AM and FM stations that are part of the nonprofit radio, I don't know, empire? Is that overstating it? Is that network? Maybe network is more appropriate. Empire, maybe empire in June. By then it'll be an empire. Let's do more live listener love. New Bern, North Carolina, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Live listener love out to you. And let's go abroad. We have a couple in Japan, Okazaki and also Sugamihara, Japan. Konnichiwa. Broma, Sweden is with us. Welcome, Broma, Sweden. I don't know how to say in your language. What's the closest I can get? Are you near? Yes, Germany. Guten Tag. But I know you don't speak German in Sweden. I know that. But that's about the closest I can come. But I do know that. Seoul, South Korea, multiple, as always. Anyo Hasayo. Italy is with us, but I can't see the city. Italy, I don't know why you're always masked. I don't know. Roma, Venezia, Napoli, Gioia Tauro, one of the Cinque Terre cities, Manarola, Rio Maggiore. I've been to all of them. I wish I knew where you were, but live listener love to Italy. And also moving up north to Ontario, Canada, Sudbury. Live listener love there also. Sorry, Gene. Had to do a little world tour. Hope you didn't mind that.
I love hearing where all the listeners are coming from.
It's cool, isn't it? Yes, around the world. Unbelievable. Broma, Sweden. I love that. Okay. More tips for evaluating and comparing potential crowdfunding sites that we might use.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that you have to look at is whether the crowdfunding site has rules about making charitable contributions through their site or not. So Kickstarter doesn't allow for general unrestricted solicitations. You have to solicit for a particular project on Kickstarter.
Okay.
So if you solicit for a particular project, now you're raising just restricted funds and not unrestricted funds. So you've got to make sure that your accounting systems and that your infrastructure is ready to support that. You also have to figure out whether you're issuing the proper type of receipt to donors. So in Kickstarter, again, if you're raising for a particular project, and what's very typical for Kickstarter is you raise funds and you give something to the donor or the contributor to the campaign in return for that, a right to first production of a book or some benefit there. So now you've got a quid pro quo contribution potentially if it's not just a low-cost, de minimis item. And you've got to issue a proper receipt to that donor that says, well, here's your gift of $100, mm-hmm. but you receive something of value of $25 in return. Therefore, the deductible portion of that payment is $75. Something like that has got to be given to the donor. And if the crowdfunding site isn't able to facilitate the charity to be able to offer those proper quid pro quo disclosure statements, then you've got a problem. So you just got to make sure that your crowdfunding sites are aware of the charity laws as well.
Okay. There's also potential fees. These sites make money sometimes off the money that's raised. So there's fee potential. And then also donor information. Some of the sites will not share the donor information with you.
Right, which is a problem. So in fees, yes, you do want to compare fees to make sure that they're not exorbitant in relation to the type of campaign that you want to conduct. And it also may indicate whether the crowdfunding site operator is operating within kind of the ethical parameters that charities think that they operate in. So, for example, if a crowdfunding site, and I don't believe any of the major ones do this, but if a crowdfunding site is saying, we want to take a portion, a percentage of your donations that, let's say, exceeds 10% or 20%, that may really be a problem. And you may actually run into other regulated areas if you start to take a exorbitant fees where you're actually sharing donations with a for-profit entity.
Oh, my. Yeah, I could see trouble there. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
But typical, like, credit card processing fees, 3.5%. Often there's kind of a crowdfunding site fee to provide that platform for you, and then the credit card processing fee to take in those donations. So, you know, anywhere, 3 to 4 to 5% for each of those things, so a total of up to 10%, is probably pretty common amongst the big crowdfunding site operators.
Okay. Privacy issues, right? There's the issue we just mentioned. Are they sharing the donor information with you? But privacy information, what are they doing with the data, people's data?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another issue about whether they're a regulated professional or not. So without diving into that too deep, if they're really just providing the platform for you, they have to disclose your donors. And if they're not willing to disclose your donors, you have a problem because that information you're entitled to, and in many cases you may have to report that if it's a large contribution to the IRS as well. So that's just something that you need, I think, when a charity uses a crowdfunding site. In terms of protecting the privacy of the donors, you do absolutely want to take a look at the crowdfunding site operator's privacy policy to find out whether the donors that are contributing there are going to be now subject to a bunch of other similar campaigns and have their emails flooded with solicitation, or whether they're going to give up other, you know, information that might create both legal or just donor relation problems for your charity.
We just have about a minute and a half left or so, 1 minute actually left. Just today in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, I saw the Minnesota Attorney General suing a company called Savers, and they're a brick and mortar store, and they give part of their part of the revenue or from items they sell goes to charity. The charities aren't being sued, but they're being named, and, you know, it's like Disabled American Veterans, Epilepsy Foundation, Lupus Foundation. So, you know, this is all related to your point that reputation could be out there, even if you're not doing something wrong.
Yeah, and why you talked about monitoring how your organization is being used, because sometimes, and I don't know about this particular case, but sometimes a commercial co-venture, which is a little bit of a jargony term, but any for-profit that uses a charity's name to say, well, if you buy from us, we'll give a portion of the proceeds to this charity,
right,
may be done without your knowing it. As a charity, not knowing that they're using your name, and they should obviously be letting you know that that's happening, but you do have some responsibility as a charity to make sure that you know when somebody's conducting a campaign like that.
We have to leave
reportedly on your behalf.
Gene, we have to leave it there. I thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you in 10 days or so. Gene Takagi at GTAC on Twitter and the nonprofit lawblog.com. Thank you very much, Gene.
Thanks, Tony. See you soon.
All right, you bet. Next week, two NTC interviews, Emerging Tech Trends and Now Get Buy-In. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Where else would you go? Opportunity Collaboration, the world convenes for poverty alleviation. It's outstanding, and it'll ruin you for every other conference. OpportunityCollaboration.net. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is on the board as the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, SusanChavez.com. And our music is by Scott Stein. I love when he affirms what I just said. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about nonprofit radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is weird. Plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gifts.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.